It's quite a heavy car, aren't they?
It's like 2.5 tons, and yet it's the quickest car on the road.
Oh, there goes my stomach.
You gotta have a drive. Because it's so heavy, it's impossible to roll, and it sticks because it's just a layer of batteries and two little engines at the front and the back. Yeah. And that's it. The rest is like SpaceX chassis, you know, like the... I was thinking last night, not just like with technology and stuff, but community and relationships. That's what kind of... I'm more interested in conversation around how are our relationships and our connection with one another and the earth and animals evolving to a place where we're more in harmony. Like, I suppose there's that phase, like, the people that love peace need to organise themselves as well as the people that love war. How can we, like, integrate love as the standard of connection with...
Something I think about all the time is, is <it>? the notion of business and community.
Yeah.
And how we spend more time at work than any other relationship in life.
Right.
And I'm not sure businesses have taken on that responsibility and really thought about it and are conscious of the fact that we need to be considerate of the fact that businesses are responsible for the fabric of our society.
Wow.
And for me, we don't as business leaders and people that are running businesses think enough about culture of a business. And that's the thing that keeps me up at night when I'm running a business is
your responsibility.
Whether people feel great about coming to work. Because if they don't, we're in real trouble. Because you think about relationships in life. We've all had a bad boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, been in that sort of relationship. And it's been pretty negative and pretty bad place to be. And you're probably at your worst, the both of you.
Mm.
And for me, workplaces, a lot of workplaces, I'd say up to 90%, are bad places to be. And people are spending the majority of their time in these places that are bad place to be. So what do? They become not as good a person as they could be. And society starts to suffer. So we, as business leaders, need to take on this responsibility of providing the best possible workplace we can provide. And for me, it's... Governments have to start to regulate this in a sense, where rather than, you know, you get politicians talking about tax cuts and how that'll make business thrive and growth occur, and it's all about the numbers, which are important.
Mm.
But tax cuts should be only given to companies that provide wonderful cultures.
Mm.
And then as a result of that, we're going to get a much better society.
That's wicked. That's so cool, man. I love that, how obvious that is to you.
So this whole notion of rather than just rewarding for growth and numbers and like businesses having a business plan, they need to have a culture plan as well. And the culture plan needs to be as important as the business plan.
And why do you think it's not?
A lack of education, a lack of a need for leaders to be authentic.
Right.
I think back 20, 30 years ago, there weren't things like social media, there weren't things like the amount of information that we were able to access and learn about how others were doing things.
Yeah.
So that creates this accountability and sense of need to become better.
Yeah.
There are some challenging things about social media, but there's also some really good things because it brings to life the reality of how people are.
Mm.
And so you could get away with compartmentalising your life and justifying that, you know, I can be a different person at work than I am at home. And how they do this is my family comes first, and then I can go and be as brutal as I need to be at work because I'm doing this all for my family.
Yeah.
And that's an old-fashioned notion, but it is a notion that exists with the generation before us. And unfortunately, still a lot of them think that way, that it's okay to be someone completely different to who you are at work than you are at home. And you see it all the time. People suit up.
Yeah.
Who wears a suit on the weekend? Yeah. Why are you suiting up? Is that to bring on a different person, a different aura, to sort of bring on this sense of superiority?
Totally.
Absolutely not necessary. So we're getting found out these days that you can't do that. And you can't compartmentalise. And there's a generation demanding more of our leaders, saying, no, it's not on for you to act like that, be like that.
So the disingenuous is a keystone from what you're saying to me.
That's
like,
right.
The fact that it's insincere as a human being to have a front, which I feel like you sense in your personal life if you've got someone that's like, you know, fronting.
That's right.
And so I suppose if you sniff it in business, it's kind of become the social standard. So people expect it. Or, they do expect it. I kind of expect certain people in an organisation to have that.
Exactly. And why? What's that? Wow. Why is that fair?
Yeah.
Why is that acceptable? And obviously there's appropriate times for people to dress up out of respect and those sorts of things. That's
when they go home to their family.
Exactly. So,
put a suit on to say hello to your wife at the end of the day.
Correct. Out of respect. You're dressed up.
That should be it, though. Yeah, exactly. At least that's one way to actually flip it.
Bring love to it, hey?
That's a creative way for an organisation to go, hey, let's just be relaxed and have fun at work.
Yes.
Let's dress up for our wives at home.
Yeah.
And husbands. And
that's why I meditate every time I get home from a long day, so as I can be in my best possible state for my wife.
Right.
I'll take the 20 minutes out.
Great. It's the soul's way to put a suit on.
Yeah, exactly. Dress my soul up. I like that.
That's really good, man. And you do it in the morning as well?
We do it in the morning, yeah. So I've actually just gotten back into doing it twice per day. My wife's done it twice per day for 4 years now, so she's a much better person than me. But I've noticed that she is, so now I'm trying to join her, and I've got back into twice over the last 4 weeks. Look out. So that's why I'm coming up with all these amazing understandings of what's going on with business and society. It's all, ever since I started meditating twice a day. No, I did start out twice a day for about 3-4 months.
Yeah.
And that guy,
you like 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah. 3-4 months. I should have held for a little longer there. Yeah. And that guided us through the most challenging times in business. You know,
right.
I had a lot of people confront me and say, you can't meditate through your way to profits.
Really?
Yeah.
That's Tell me about
ridicule
that.
Ridicule me and sort of give me a hard time out of not getting more stressed about the situation and trying to deal with it in the
get
way.
Get more stressed.
Well, yeah, that'll fix it.
Yeah. What made you go against that?
Well, it felt like the right thing to do. And look, the benefits were noticeable, and the focus on the issue that was primed and right in front of you at that moment became laser-like, rather than concerning yourself with events that had come earlier in the day or that were to come later. It enabled me to focus on what I could do now. And I've always had this intuitive sense that focusing on your circle of influence was the most important thing to advance your career and advance your influence.
Right.
And so the things you can control. And then as a result of doing what you can control very, very well, your circle becomes a little larger, and you know, if you do that with the right intention, other people wish to follow and they want to become part of that circle, and
it feels like it happens quite naturally and
you're in flow.
I've
confused people when people have asked me, how are you feeling? And I've said, I'm in flow. What do you mean by flow? Well, you know, when you've got those days where everything's falling into place and effortless fashion, that's when you're in flow. And I think that if we can aspire to doing that as humans, and we will have a better place. I mean, it makes so much sense to create a sustainable sources of energy. It's the whole sense of whether creating a greenhouse or not really doesn't matter. It's spitting toxins into the world. And if I go to a place like China, and where in Shanghai you're 4 to 5 times more likely to end up with lung cancer.
Jeez.
We're killing ourselves as well as the world.
Oh my God.
You cannot see more than 10 metres ahead of you. I don't want to live in a city like that or a country like that.
Yeah.
So in that sense, why wouldn't we make the world more sustainable. If you just need to go and visit one of those places that are heavily polluted, and you see that what could be if we're not aware of what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's a non-argument.
Exactly, and that's about how can you access the people that are making the big decisions in systematically and culturally and business moneyly.
Yeah. It's a challenging thing to do. You need to speak their language in a sense,
right.
and connect with them on a level that helps them understand and respect what you're talking about.
Right.
So you have to show that you can be successful in what they're successful in,
and
show that there's alternate ways to doing that and be even more successful.
Well, that's exactly what Elon's done, isn't it?
Yes,
in the States, his company is more successful than the whole oil industry in the US.
More valuable than any other US car company. Line ball with GM, so it's amazing.
Yeah.
And the opportunity is so much bigger as a result of thinking that way.
So you feel hopeful for humanity in that sense, like seeing people like him and obviously people like yourself as well that are causing positive impact change in a real, real way?
I think that we're not alone.
Yeah.
There are a lot of us that want to see society in a better state than it is, and we're seeing various things happening in the world that are worrying, but also things that are really positive as well. And there'll always be this balance of good and bad.
Yeah,
and finding somewhere in the middle is what we do naturally as humans. And if you look at our trajectory as a race, there's a little less killing going on, and we're having these conversations now that wouldn't have happened many years ago. Maybe they were, but they weren't recorded like this or easily accessible, so that we could connect en masse and help each other build on the momentum we're creating around this kind of sense of a better world. So meeting someone like Richard Branson recently, and his goal to make changes and ignite change and unite people behind great causes is pretty unique.
Is it?
And you talk about Elon and what he's doing and he's living it out. And both those guys are trying to fly beyond this planet as well.
So true.
Like doing rockets. It's so cool. So it's pretty interesting talking to him about him and Bezos, who's the Amazon guy. He lives in an island across from Necker Island.
Wow.
And so the three of those guys do catch up and talk. It's competitive, obviously.
Yeah, but that's good.
Yeah, but they do talk about the future and getting rockets up into space, because I think that helps us advance as a race and gives us perspective on us as a there's a sense of when you look down on this planet that we have, it's very, very precious.
Mm.
And a lot of astronauts talk about that, and I think the more people that get to see that, perhaps we'll have greater empathy for how much we need to look after this place.
That's awesome. That's an effective way to awaken people, isn't it? For them to experience. And that's why I learn through meditation as well, having that direct experience with much greater energy and unity, because I think that's what I care about most, is unifying our race, unifying our people. And I think love is such an intelligent force, and I'd love to see it really running the world, And it does actually make me happy, hearing your direct experience with people like Richard Branson. They're actually genuinely really good people, and they really care.
That's right. And I think that it's difficult to thrive in this world that now has so much more accountability in place through technology.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you get found out if you're not who you are.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
And if you don't,
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so
so social media is exposing the disingenuous, really.
I think so.
Donald Trump's pretty hard to, easy to see through.
Exactly. It demands more of our leaders, demands more of our businesses, demands more of people in society. So it can magnify the bad as much as it magnifies the good. So this tool is I think advancing humankind, in one way or another.
Yeah.
But it's...
Along the way, it's bringing out some pretty ugly things.
That's right, yeah. But maybe that needs to be brought to bear to be dealt with.
True. I think it does.
It might have been always... It was always there in the shadows.
Yeah.
But now it's being brought to bear. It's been made alive, and we're being asked as humans, do we want this or not? So,
well, that's definitely true of our own issues, like my own problems or anything. If I don't bring them to light, they don't really resolve.
That's right.
So I suppose as a collective consciousness, if they're not collectively brought to rise, they're not going to resolve.
Exactly. Purging.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. We always see some ugly stuff.
Well, Dad's an integrative doctor. And
cool.
Integrative doctor's about preventative medicine as well as fix-it medicine.
Oh, awesome.
And combining the two. So the patient's as healthy as they possibly can be to deal with whatever chronic disease they may be dealing with.
Oh, wow.
And so he was one of the first people to talk about diet causing disease back in the 70s in conventional medical circles. He was laughed at as a professor of surgery.
Oh, really?
And he was laughed at back then when he was talking about food and so forth. And now, obviously, things have changed a lot. And exercise, too, and all those things. So he's done a lot of work around meditation, and he's chairman of the Gawler Foundation, where they're focused on providing cancer sufferers with meditation and training them in that modality.
Really?
And he's also now on this whole other dynamic where he believes meditation, diet, and being in the best possible space we can be to deal with chronic disease is really, really important.
Yeah.
But he also sees that unloading is really essential.
Yeah,
and
right.
Unloading is this conversation
yeah.
like we're having now, and we're talking about the issues of the world or the things that are concerning us.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why things like, he always points to things like going for a coffee is a great thing with someone else. So you're having that chat, or you're doing something that's kind of creating an air of ability to unload.
That's really interesting.
And so, yeah, it's an interesting thing Dad's intuitively kind of fallen after now 76 years of...
What a legend!
To health and wellness. One of the things he's most passionate about is the way the mind works in causing disease, and that definitely rubbed off on me.
That's such an interesting whole... That's a massive conversation. I'd love to dive deeper on that one another time, but
yeah.
My dad's a GP, and he even says that by nature of Dad just going to his patient, just having positive outlook or reassuring them that they're okay, that he says that's 90% of fixing them.
Exactly. Hey? That's why you're such a special soul.
Jump in, Rad.
I'm nervous. Got it. I was doing the sort of nervous 2 foot sort of start. Wow. That's that is awesome. I love the Sphygma core that sort of lights up here on the right.
Yeah.
Sort of let it rip.
Power usage.
And how'd you get into meditation?
and then you take off. So how'd you get into meditation? And then transcend time and space. I got into meditation because I was... I grew up real Christian. Then I left the church, left going to church because I wanted a greater understanding of what God was. It just didn't work. And then I got pretty depressed because I was like, my mind was, because I didn't have that spiritual connection anymore. So then I after seeing a psychologist for a bit, and eating well, the other main thing that got me out of it was meditating. I did it for like 9 months every day, non-negotiable, and then I kind of noticed my brain change. So I'm obsessed with it now.
Who taught you the meditation the first time?
Well, I taught myself. I just went to some Buddhist things and Googled it. But that was like 5 years ago.
It must have been your purpose to do meditation.
Yeah, I think so.
To be able to do it yourself and learn it yourself is an amazing...
Well, not the exact same thing that Johnny taught us.
Yeah,
but
exactly. But to be able to learn a discipline of doing it for 9 months and to notice the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me years to find a great coach.
Yeah.
And I practiced it. I've been to mindfulness workshops, and I grew up doing Japanese ink brush painting where you do meditation
before
you kind of paint, and creative dance, which I'd stopped
I want to see a bit of that.
Yeah, it's just awesome. You can sometimes see it Friday nights at really cool nightclubs. Well, not anymore.
Yeah,
back in the day.
I love that stuff.
And then yoga and so forth. But it was never something I could pick up as a discipline beyond those sorts of learning workshops.
Oh, right.
Until I met Johnny, who is an amazing teacher.
But fierce, isn't it? Yeah.
To teach yourself is extraordinary.
It worked. And then I think it was like 4 years and then Johnny's technique, or the Vedic transcendental, just resonated. It was the easiest, was the most effortless form of meditation. All the other Buddhist ones found a bit too much effort.
Well, you look forward to it, don't you?
Yeah, totally.
You know you're in flow when you're looking forward to meditation.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it's definitely has a transformative effect on your life. It's nicer when it's a little bit lower as well, because you stick a bit more.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly what we need.
Exactly what we need.
Little kick.
I think it's all wheel. I think every wheel's going.
That is really cool. That really dripped around that corner,
didn't it? But it doesn't screech. The wheels don't slide out.
It's must be something about the weight or the dynamics of the distribution of it that keeps it so stable.
I love hearing about the business integration, or the business being a real... I mean, I think that's why I did one post about meditating in businesses, and I got a bunch of people like, hey, can you come to my business and do it? That's proof in itself that there's a real need within organisations to have that kind of mindfulness.
Yes.
And so that's quite positive even in itself.
I think so. And I think the one thing is that as humans, we do need to be held accountable. So as much as the leaders need to provide a better workplace, that better workplace needs to be driven by performance and outcomes. Yeah.
Right.
So any times I've kind of put in initiatives into businesses that I work with where, you know, they're for culture, it's important to do that. But there needs to be a sense of, well, if we're not accountable to results, then it can't be sustainable.
Gotcha.
Corporately sustainable.
Yeah.
It doesn't work as well. So if you're to give out a reward, like we did, we gave people a day off every time there wasn't a public holiday. Now, we did that originally, and we just did it willy-nilly. Everyone would get it, and you'd get a day off when there wasn't a public holiday. Yeah. Fantastic place to work and so forth, and I could organise plumbers and so forth to come on that day per month. And we definitely had a decrease in sick leave.
Yeah.
And the place was a better place to work. But what I noticed after a while was taken for granted. People saw it as that they had to have their H&H day, which is health and happiness day.
Right.
And it was their right. Oh, hang on. The whole intent of this was to make it actually an aspirational thing to have in the workplace and something that should be cherished.
Yeah.
So we actually turned it into something you needed to earn.
Right.
And you'd have to have a conversation with your manager about how you're performing, whether things were going well or not. And that would force this situation where you're coached on the job. Yeah, talk about how you can improve and encourage conversations to occur on performance. And that's so important.
So kind of like a performance review?
Yeah, but performance review can't be so... The performance review is something that's so structured, it forces the conversation every 3 or 6 months.
Yeah.
And look, it's an important thing to have, but I think that's the early instrument of where we're heading, which is where we need to head, and the more sustainable is where you've got permission to learn in the workplace.
Yeah, yeah.
And permission to be coached in the workplace. And coaching should be seen as a positive thing. So many people, when they're getting feedback, they go, oh, no, what's this mean? It's a bad thing. And we react so negatively to it.
Yeah.
But really, we should be so thankful and saying, thanks for the opportunity for me to become better.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me know about what I need to do to improve.
So
if that's coming from a great place or a positive place, you create this much better work environment. I always liken it to sporting teams where, you know, they've got two halves of soccer or football going on and the coach talks to the players about how to improve all week, and they have training sessions, and then they've even got a half-time break to talk with the coach about what they can do better.
Yeah.
Now, if those players were turning around and back-chatting to the coach, that'd be a pretty dysfunctional team.
That's true.
But if the players were excited about the coach and what they had to say and offer and respected the coach, they're going to be a much better team.
Yeah.
Now, in the workplace, we don't have that situation where we've got the coach and people looking forward to learning more from the skills coach or the defensive coach and how they can improve in those sorts of areas. Yeah. We need to have a workplace that's thriving with this energy of communication, open, honest communication.
Right.
And it needs to be safe to communicate too. And
yeah.
So these are dynamics that will improve our workforces tenfold if we have this situation where there's permission to give feedback and it's truly seen as a gift.
Yep.
So it's like going to a personal trainer. We go to personal trainers to get fit and we want them to encourage us. Can you imagine if the personal trainer said to us, oh, 10 push-ups and halfway through, oh, you're looking really tired. This is not going to work out for you.
Not going to work out.
Like, why have I got the trainer? But, you know, we pay these people to help us get fit and encourage us to do that.
Yeah.
Why can't the workplace be like that? Why aren't we encouraging each other? Why aren't we actively thinking about how we can improve?
I suppose it needs to feel like this mutually beneficial thing.
That's right.
And so I suppose there's something about a corporate structure that feels like it's...
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
Was that a first?
Let's get out of here.
I think we can get out of here pretty quick. Just as we're talking about feedback.
Hey? Yeah.
Perfect.
In the same way, driver feedback loops in the same way. He wants the best for us.
Exactly. Thank you for that. I'll be a much better driver after that.
Like, I work in a small team and I work with my friends, and it feels like we have the... It's a brothership love.
Exactly.
It feels like it's a brotherhood love.
So you can have that conversation and you feel like it's safe to have it, don't
yeah.
you?
And I can feel like I've cried in front of them. There's authenticity there, and yet we still kick goals.
Yeah.
I mean, like, are we moving in smaller teams? Is there this inherent mistrust in a corporate environment?
I think that there will be more inherent mistrust in corporate environments. We're seeing that through the rejection of traditional political parties. A lot of upheaval going on with corporates as they are and workers asking for more and expecting more, which I think is an important thing that needs to happen. So we're seeing this social change occur, and also we're seeing people wanting to fragment and be in smaller organisations rather than the big corporate. It's not so much an aspiration of the best students to go and work for the largest corporations.
Right. This book called Steel and Fire, I don't know if you've heard of it, but it talks about the Silicon Valley entrepreneurs and also the Navy SEALs and how they all sink into this level of consciousness that is very much in flow. Like in the Navy SEALs example, they all lead and expect to be led as well. So if the one person in front's looking left, they're looking right, and they work and move for a place like this incredible collective organism. And they do that in Silicon Valley. Like, I think they used the Google heads as an example of the CEO that they hired that flipped the company into...
Organised the chaos.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what happened to us at Swiss, is that we had a much smaller team than everyone we competed against.
Yeah.
We had a team that were highly dynamic, highly aware of our strategy, in tune with it, and whenever any one of us wasn't in the room, the other would do what we would do as a collective team.
Cool.
If we're all there together.
That's cool.
And we also balanced each other's weaknesses out extraordinarily well. So it was a really unique mix that enabled us to be extraordinarily successful. So.
And it felt natural. Like, did you kind of all fall into that place, or did you hire to make that place, or?
Yeah, a lot of the people that I worked with, well, everyone came from another industry, so that was really important for us.
Right.
A lot of the people, the majority of the people that I worked closely with, were all great friends before they worked with me. So
yeah.
People say, there used to be this old adage where you shouldn't hire your friends or family.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's because you can't be your real self.
Yeah, true. That's where
mean?
It comes from, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think that's what they kind of averted from, is that that's why you can't work with your mates. Because you might be...
His friendship is insincere.
Exactly. Jeez. So, or the reverse, work is insincere.
Right.
So for me, it was, you know, working at Village Roadshow, and I worked in the candy bar where I worked with my mates. And I had to get respect through actions and so forth as I started to lead in that environment. Yeah. And, you know, I took that all the way through to corporate and leadership roles across big organisations, where it was a great thing to work with friends because I knew what I was going to get. We had great trust, admiration for each other's work. And as a result of that, we were able to get through some extraordinary difficult times.
That's so cool.
Through camaraderie and through that sense of flow and connection.
That's wonderful, isn't it? And how joyful is it to work in a space like that?
Oh, there's nothing better. And that's part of that, looking forward to coming to the workplace. As you mentioned, you've got great bonds with the people that you work with.
If you look forward to going to work, you're completely winning.
Well, you're in a better mood, and when we're in a better mood, you know, we all strive to be in a better mood because we know we function better as humans. So we make better decisions, we think larger, we're able to cope with stress and the things that come up in everyday life if we're in a better space. So why not have mechanisms that help you be in that place faster, like great friends who bring the best out of you, or family. So those things were a huge part of why we were successful at Swiss, is, you know, doing things a little differently, disrupting in the form of providing a great culture and workplace that then would reinvent the way things were done. And that created this huge momentum and a wonderful result where we ended up selling our business for one of the largest private sales that were ever done in Australia.
Wow.
Life's pretty good these days. Although when we had zero profit and 70 million worth of debt, it didn't feel that way. But I knew all we needed was just a bit of time.
What was it about you, like how you had the assurance to go, now this is the way? And kept coming back to it in the face of all the challenges that it sounds like you got.
Yeah, it's like, a great question.
Was that part of you that really cares or like knew so surely?
I think there is that connection to intuition rather than just the intellect. And we would regularly do what intuitively felt right and dig really deep in the sense of, is this going to get the result we're aiming for? And as I said, the things that would concern me of a night time would be, is our workplace a place that enables people to thrive and feel great about themselves and bring out the best about themselves? So,
why did you want that, though?
Because, it feels like that we can only be at our best if we provide the best for people. And that's a sense of accountability for me as much as on our team. And every single person was responsible for creating what we had. And the culture of the place. And as a result of that, and you know, me showing a humanness that was concerned about those things, but also would point out when I got things wrong.
Yeah.
And enable others to sort of talk about when they got things wrong. And I think you learn most from failure. If you look at Elon and some of his work, that they learn most from when a rocket doesn't work. It works. And they actually go into what goes wrong and they learn so much from it to create a better rocket. And it's the same in everyday life and everyday workplaces, is that we tend to not reflect enough on what goes wrong.
Yeah.
Because we go into the negative space. Well, why not look at it? Yeah, it's a bad thing. Yeah, great. We'll get over that. Now let's look at how the positives we can bring out from that experience and become a better business as a result of that. So I think we did that really well.
So that was your pushing into pain or like going into the negatives, and that's why you probably created such a healthy ecosystem in the company, is because you weeded out any darkness that was there.
Exactly. It was confronting.
Yeah.
So for some people that was not, they weren't comfortable. So I would say, we'll let you
You're
go.
Fired.
We'll let you go to somewhere where you'll be much happier.
Yeah.
Somewhere miserable. It's where you can be miserable. That's great. We're going to ask more of you.
Yeah.
And we want you to contribute and be authentic and throw your full self into it. That's confronting. But that confrontation enabled great success and enabled our workplace to be as authentic as it possibly could be.
That's awesome. Hey, thanks, man.
Thank you.
That was really, cheers for that. Love the chat.
Great to catch up.